This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, good morrow, everybody. I am as excited as can be because I am once again joined in studio. This is The Other Side of Midnight, by the way. I'm Frank Morano. By a man who some of you have called the most interesting man in the world. A man who has been an actor, a singer, an author, a podcast host, a businessman, an entrepreneur. And he's one of the few guests that I've ever interviewed that as soon as he leaves, both the minute after he leaves and the days following his appearance, people immediately ask, when is he coming back? When is he coming back? And the answer is always the same, as often as he'd like to. Now, I was a little amazed yesterday. I go into the area where all the radio talk show hosts get their mail yesterday, and I saw there was some mail for him, along with the radio talk show hosts, and he doesn't even work here yet, at least not yet. I am very, very pleased to welcome actor, singer, and the author of Hollywood Godfather, My Life in the Movies and the Mob, Johnny Russo. Johnny, it's great to see you again.
My pleasure, Frank, always. You know that.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. It's funny, the stories that you've told in your book, and we've chronicled every one of them, chapter and verse, are great. But there's something about listening to you tell a story that is unlike anything else on the radio or in the podcast world. So if people do enjoy your commentary and the way that you tell these stories, I definitely want to encourage them to listen to the Hollywood Godfather podcast, which is still going strong, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. We're in 9 countries now.
Wow.
And yeah, we're broadcasting out of my house at 15,000 watts.
Not bad. Not bad. If people want to check it out, they can just search Hollywood Godfather.
Hollywood Godfather's on iTunes, Spotify, Cloud, you name it.
Well, it's everywhere. Now, the last time you were here, you correctly predicted something that nobody else would predict. Everyone else was saying that the Best Actor nomination was going to Chadwick Boseman. You were the only person who said not only would you be voting for Anthony Hopkins for Best Actor, but you actually predicted that he would win. What did you know that nobody else did?
Well, you know, I know how Hollywood is. I mean, they're under a lot of pressure now, as we all know, for political reasons. But the masses of the voters, like myself, we're old school. An 85, when's he going to get nominated again?
Right.
This was his second nomination after a career. You know, I got to really know him well when we did Red Dragon with Brett Ratner. He brought me into that film. And to get to know this guy, and I don't know how many people watched Entertainment Tonight or anything after the Oscars, because, you know, he was shocked. And he did this jig and this dance. A guy's so full of life.
He made it out like he didn't even expect to win.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He thought because, you know, the political pressures.
Right.
Without getting political.
Well, and Chadwick Boseman dying, I would think.
Yeah, of course.
Sympathy vote.
A sympathy vote. But,
so,
you know.
It was interesting that he won when nobody expected to. Also interesting that this was the lowest rated Academy Awards in terms of TV ratings in history. Now, that was even lower rated than last year, which was the lowest rated in history. It seems that the interest in the public has in watching these award shows continues to diminish. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I've been a member, fortunately, now 52 years to the Guild. And in the last 10 years, you've watched the ratings go down. I think it's getting too political.
Mm.
I mean, even my good friend De Niro, look what he did to his career.
I have so many listeners that are fans of Robert De Niro and his work, and they say, I won't watch him anymore.
I know.
I won't watch anything he does anymore, because it's not only that he disagreed with their politics, it's just that he was so over the top in going after after Trump. You think it's a mistake for actors to get that political?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I had a conversation with him when he first appeared on Saturday Night Live. Mm. And I called him the next day because he's on speed dial with me, especially when he wants something. He calls you every 10 minutes. He'll drive you crazy. And I told him, because he and I probably, maybe you're too young, but we watched a lady really destroy her career many, many years ago during the Vietnam War.
Jane Fonda.
And thank God she married the guy from CNN and then did exercise videos but never came back. She's coming back as an older woman now in comedies, which is great. But, when I never get political. I'm not political to begin with. But the thing is that, I don't have a left or a right side. I just try to, if it seems right to me,
sure,
stay with it. But I'm not going to get on any soapbox and destroy my career.
That's what I don't understand about a lot of these actors, directors, writers, is you have to think they want liberals and conservatives, libertarians, socialists, whomever, people that aren't even political, to watch their movies and their product. Why would they go out of their way to alienate one portion of the public?
Well, he's I shouldn't say personal things about him, but he's very angry.
De Niro,
after his last marriage. It's cost him a fortune, and he's bitter.
There's been, and if people just tune in, we're talking with Johnny Russo, probably best known as an actor for playing Carlo in The Godfather, but he's been in a lot of great films, Seabiscuit, The Freshman, Any Given Sunday, the list goes on and on. Great films, some not-so-great films, all interesting stories that are chronicled in his book, Hollywood Godfather, which is also the name of his podcast, which is a place where there's some great interviews and there's some great stories told. And he actually, in each episode, will address questions from the public. That's a privilege we have here today, is if you want to call in and ask Johnny a question about anything, you can do so at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. In terms of that De Niro divorce, New York Post put it on its front page, the coverage of the divorce hearing, and De Niro's lawyer says part of the reason that he has to work all the time, do 4, 5, 6 movies a year, including some not so great films, is because he's so hard up for cash because of his divorce. Is that true from what you've seen?
Well, what I know of, I've done a couple of projects with him, and we were developing 2 or 3 that never worked. De Niro, if you have an extra $1 million a week, you could pay him. He'll come read the newspaper for you. That's what he gets. He gets $1 million a week. So, like you said, he's not particular because he needs the money.
That might be a fun GoFundMe for us to do to get him here. I think if we can get $1 million, we might be able to find a better use for that, Christian. But
I
that
think
would
so.
Be cool. To have him
I mean, it would be great,
newspaper.
But maybe we use the $1 million to go to Atlantic City and win some money.
Yeah, but I think it would be very hard to raise $1 million now on De Niro.
I think you're right, especially with this audience. 800-848-WABC. Speaking of movies, you were telling us last time you were here that they're actually making a TV series based on your life and the events that you cover in your book. How's that going?
Oh, it's going really well. Fortunately, I have probably the greatest production team in TV right now. I got Colin Wilson, who did all the Mandalorians. He got 15 Emmy nominations. He also did Avatar and all of that. Mm-hmm. Nick Vallelonga, who took the book and adapted it into a 10-hour miniseries after winning for Green Book and all of that and won Best Screenplay and Best Picture that year. And then my writing team, I have Chaz Palminteri writing 3 hours and directing them.
Wow.
George Gallo, Midnight Run, 29th Street, written and directing them. And now I give you a bulletin, actually. I am so enamored with Dante Palminteri.
Chaz's son,
to play me younger. And the kid really looks great. And so We're aggressively moving. I think we may be even in production within 6 weeks.
Well, that is tremendous. I mean, the stories that are in this book are unlike anything that I've seen anywhere. And I would love to see it on the screen sometime. In terms of divorce, talking about De Niro, I know you have some history being married and not married yourself as the father of 11 children from multiple different women. We're seeing the Bill and Melinda Gates divorce.
Oh,
now.
My God.
I think they have to worry about how they're going to split up $140 billion worth of assets.
Oh, no, they did it already.
Well, when you have that much money, I guess it's no, an but easy
the,
thing.
You know what? I'm on the inside of that a
tell
little
me,
bit.
Tell me.
No, but the three kids are only getting $10 million each.
Well, I mean, my heart goes out to them.
Well, I mean, yep. When your father has that kind of money, my kids want $10 million from me. I don't have billions.
But they did that intentionally so that they wouldn't be.
Yeah, they want to go out.
And,
yeah, that, well, they've done that. You know, and basically, I still don't believe it because knowing, I mean, I don't know them personally, but we all have followed their careers and what they've done. I mean, even during the pandemic, I mean, they invested $1 billion. Just in the vaccine.
I mean, I think it took a lot of people by surprise. But if you were to give marriage advice to somebody these days, whether it's the Gateses or somebody getting married who is a pauper, what would you say? What's the key to a successful marriage and avoiding some of the tumult and turmoil that maybe you've experienced from time to time?
Well, you took it to the wrong guy. I have 10 mothers to my kids.
Well, they say 10 mothers, really.
I have 10 mothers. I've been married 4 times. I have 10 mothers to my kids. I'm fortunate I have 2 girls and 9 boys.
They say nobody appreciates the power of a flame more than somebody that's been burned. So I think I'm talking to the
right
guy.
Oh, I'm not burned at all. Oh, no. You know, see, with me, I had such a traumatic beginning that after I walked out of Bellevue when I was 12, I never turned back. I mean, I've left. You would think I was rich. I mean, I left a 10,000-square-foot house on Mulholland Drive with a Ferrari and a Bentley in it, and all my clothes never came back. I don't go back. I don't argue. I'll mull it over. I'll wait. But once that door closed, I'm not coming back. I don't come back.
Having that kind of a family situation could be difficult, I would think, at times for your own children. Does everybody get along with one another?
Most of them don't even know each other.
Is that true?
Well, some of them from all over the world.
Wow.
See, I did something early on. I made a lot of money. I could talk about it now because statute of limitations are over. But I bought a Riva, you know, 148-foot Riva when I was 21 for $3 million cash.
Wow.
So I always blame it on my boat. It's very romantic on a boat.
I have no doubt. All right, we're going to continue with Johnny Russo, my guest for the hour. If you want to call in, you could do so, 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Johnny's up to quite a bit. He's hosting this podcast. He's got a clothing line. He's got a line of food and beverages that is just growing like crazy. We'll explore that. And take your questions at 800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. My guest for the hour, the great Johnny Russo, straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Jack, yeah, where we need Jack.
Welcoming back Johnny Russo, one of our favorite guests, and I think the person who, at least in this iteration of this program, has been a guest on the show more times than anybody, and we've yet to run out of compelling subjects to cover with him and to go over. 800-848-WABC if you have questions. Johnny, you know, we're running the promo for Nurses Day on Thursday, which the station is getting behind. And obviously our owner, John Catsimatidis, is always into promoting our frontline workers and supporting our frontline workers. You alluded to the fact that you might be doing some frontline work. What are you doing?
Oh, I've been doing it. You know, a nurse saved my life early on. My first pandemic. It was 1949 with polio. Her name was Dolores Barone. And she was a candy striper when I went in the hospital. It was an RN by the time I got out. And I can remember her just giving me that extra Jell-O and that hug at night when I needed it. So I've been going through a situation, private medical situation at New York Presbyterian. So the Monday night before Thanksgiving, I mean before New Year's this year, the nurses said to me, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? Because I all gave them a book for Christmas and they thought I was going to have this wild night. I said, I'm going home. And fortunately, it's only 5 blocks from my house. I walk up. So I said, I'm not doing nothing for New Year's Eve. I said, what are you guys doing? They said, well, we're working until 10 o'clock. So I invited them for dinner after the shift. And they've been coming every Wednesday and Saturday night for the last 5 months.
That's incredible. So you've been cooking
dinner for
and
them,
hosting.
And yeah, and they leave 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But in fact, Margot and John has been at my house. I have an 8-stool bar with a dance floor. My dining room's at 16. So it's very conducive for a party all the time.
Now, you actually live in Frank Costello's old apartment.
One of his old house. Yeah, one.
Wow.
Not the one on the west side where his wife lives. No.
Gotcha. In terms of the business of Hollywood these days, clearly, I think it's a lot different from when you made The Godfather 50 years ago, or maybe it's not. You tell me. But how would you say Hollywood has changed from 1972, around the time you were breaking in, as compared to these days?
Well, I think when I was getting involved in it, the studios, they actually had contracts with training people, dance lessons, singing lessons. Today, it's a flash in the pan, and you're as good as your last movie. Mm. That's why you don't see careers of longevity, unless you really get in the business, like Mark Wahlberg. He got into it. He produces. Most of the young guys now who are getting into it, they're forgetting their agents and all of that because you're as good as your last product and there's no loyalty.
What advice would you give to a young actor trying to get into the business today?
Well, I've done it to a couple of my kids, actually. I told them, if you want to become an actor, make sure you could join the most expensive country club in the world. They said, what are you talking about? I said, because you need that kind of money to sustain. Between films, I mean, and they don't pay when you first come out. So what are you going to do?
So do you have kids that are actors currently, or have none of them pursued it?
My daughter pursued it for a minute. She got very lucky and went on the other side of the camera, and she's still doing phenomenal. But I wouldn't throw anybody into this business unless, again, you're being supported and you truly have a gift.
Now, one of the businesses that you're involved with, which is continuing to grow, is your clothing line. How do you get into the clothing business if you're Johnny Russo? Now, if people haven't heard our previous discussions, you've done just about everything. Started out selling pens. You were a courier. You were an actor. Obviously, author, podcast host. You've known every mob boss in America. You had a big club out in Vegas. You've done everything there is to do. How does one get into the clothing business if you're Johnny Russo?
Well, what happened to me, I've been designing a lot of my own clothes for years. And people always comment to me, they love my college shirts and this, that.
I love your look. Come on. It's great.
So with that look, just recently, about a year now, two major manufacturers came to me at the same time. And one was in shoes because they love my shoes. And one was making clothes out of Milan, Italy. And they didn't know I designed all this stuff. And I registered everything. So I went in as a full partner with them. And now we launch, which I love the name, La Cosa Mia by Gianni. And it launches May 21st.
Oh, so people will be able to buy Johnny Russo designed clothes.
Yeah, to go on. In fact, what we've done because of technology, you can go online and get to the silhouettes and put all your measurements. We'll do ready-made or you could do custom design.
So you can have, without having to visit a tailor, a custom-made Johnny Russo outfit.
Right.
So is that available now, or we have to wait until after May 21st?
May 21st, the site goes up. It's now available now. And then we're closing a deal with Dillard's, which is like 380 stores. I just made a deal with Shoe Palace, 200 shoe stores. I mean, most people go out and they have to get marketing people.
Right.
I got like six companies coming after me.
You know, so clearly your days are pretty full, right? You have a line of food, food and beverage, which we'll talk about. You have a clothing line. You're doing this podcast. You do interviews like this one from time to time. What do you do when you're at leisure? What do you do for fun? Are you – something tells me –
this is my fun.
This is it.
Oh, no. I love this. I mean, just for me to be able, like you inviting me. And I have three shows this week I'm doing. I mean, I was on the Today Show out of my house in Great Britain because that's the kind of power I've had. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm doing – broadcast in London.
It's tremendous.
It's crazy.
It is absolutely
because technology
tremendous.
Today. You can do it.
Bars and restaurants reopening in New York this week. It's about time, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I feel so sorry. As you mentioned earlier, I opened my first bar on Staten Island years ago.
What block on Staten Island was that?
Nelson Avenue.
In Great Hills.
In Great Hills, yeah.
Do you remember the address?
Right on the corner. It was Joanna's with Joe Watts and all those guys, and I was involved with it. And I learned the business from them. And then from there, I went to Vegas. I opened Tiffany's inside the Tropicana Hotel. And then I opened my biggest club called Johnny Russo State Street and ran that for 10, 12 years in Vegas. Very lucrative.
Now that they're starting to allow performances, I imagine you're going to be performing in a lot of hotels and casinos all over the place.
Well, thanks to Tom Cantone, I'm doing all the Mohegan Suns. I closed, actually.
And they own resorts down in Atlantic City, right?
They I don't know how they do the management and entertainment for them. I don't know if they really own them. Uh-huh. You know, but that's what they contribute. And it's funny because in 1995, in fact, I had Easter dinner this Sunday with Ivana Trump, and I reminded her in 1995 they came to resorts that we're talking about resorts, and I was an opening act for Don Rickles. Sinatra got me the job for 1 year just for me to learn how to do that, and she came backstage. I thought they were kidding. The guard came. I just did a half hour, and the guard came and said, "Donald and Ivana want to come backstage." I said, "And Donald Duck wants to see you too." Because how come they came to see Donald Rickles? No, they actually gave me, I opened Trump Marina for them. I was my first headline.
That's why, and that's now the golden nugget. But I've got to come see you perform in Atlantic City. I've seen you perform at different private functions here in Manhattan, but I would love to see that. So you got to keep us posted
as soon as those dates are
available. Here in New York, and again, I'm thrilled that bars are opening and restaurants are reopening, but I guess part of the getting back to normal is the craziness of the uber political correctness. Today, the New York City school calendar came out for next year, and they're not giving kids off for Columbus Day. The first iteration of the New York City public school calendar was they're giving kids off for Indigenous Peoples Day, and then within an hour or two, they came out with an amendment and said, we're giving people off for Indigenous Peoples Day / Italian Heritage Day. As a guy that's been so associated with the Italian American and culture in this country, what's your view of the gradual killing off of Columbus Day?
Well, I don't. I mean, to me, you know, it's so touchy because I've been in every Columbus Day parade ever since I could walk, and then with the Casa Building Materials for 20 years, I had a float. And how can you just don't acknowledge Columbus Day anymore? It's like, I want to see if they say you can't have St. Patrick's Day anymore.
Yeah.
Which was an Italian, no less. And he's got an Irish parade. I mean, I don't know what they're trying to do. I mean, they're making changes to me to make no sense because they have to rewrite every history book.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It doesn't make much sense to me either. I alluded to the fact that, and you've talked about this when you were here before, that you control the license for every food associated with The Godfather, the movie The Godfather. Genco, Oliver.
Well, let me correct that.
Please.
My company does.
Your company does.
All these ex-wives will be calling. My company has, MJ Licensing has the exclusive food and beverage license throughout the world. And everybody says, how did you get this? Well, I got it through a very smart guy. I surround myself with a lot of people. And this guy, Joe Zorro, who was at Authentic Brands and then went to Hennessy Vitante, I hired him. And it's like I didn't even a clothing line. Everybody around me is in the business. I don't know what I'm doing.
Clearly you're doing something right.
Well, I'm just putting the right people together.
If people want to check out some of the products that you have to offer, that your company has to offer,
right,
what's the best place for them to do that?
Oh, I would go online right now, Corleone Fine Italian.
Corleone Fine Italian.
And we're expanding that line by the end of next year, which is the 50th anniversary, March 15th, 2022, is the 50th anniversary of Godfather 1.
That's going to be big.
And there's 16 more minutes never seen before, and I have a couple of those minutes, which I'm excited about, and I'm expanding the line 36 more SKUs.
Now, I remember when Coppola came out with the Godfather epic, which re-edited the first and second films in chronological order.
Right.
They put some scenes in there that had been cut from the original version, including a scene with the old the original consigliere, a scene where Vito's talking with Michael about his future. Are there additional minutes that are going to be as part of this 16 minutes?
Well, this is all Godfather 1 only.
I see.
So it's not 2 or 3.
Right, but it doesn't.
So this is all new scenes never seen.
Never seen, including in the.
Well, there's one scene in particular, and your audience will recognize, and you will also if you're an aficionado of the film. When the beating scene with my wife, which was a horrendous scene to be seen in 72.
Well, yeah, beating
because she was pregnant and all of that. What most people don't know, when she ran into the bedroom finally and I followed her in and I kicked in the bathroom door, next they cut to her screaming and she's all black and blue on her face. Well, I never hit her in the face. You only saw me whipping her with the belt and all of that. But when I got into the bathroom, I was banging her head against the sink. And now they're allowing it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's something to that'll be something.
I don't know if it's going to get me any accolades or dates on Saturday night after this, but who knows?
Talking with Johnny Russo, as I alluded to earlier, Thursday is National Nurses Day, and 77 WABC wants to recognize the nurse in your life. They are truly unsung heroes, so maybe you're cooking dinner for them on a weekly basis, as Johnny is, but all day long, we're going to talk to the nurses and hear their stories of sacrifice and caring. So if you're a nurse, we're actually giving you the chance to win a trip to Florida. You can go to wabcradio.com/nurse to register for your chance to win. And it's the radio station's way of saying thanks. And speaking with the medical mind and the medical vein that we're on, being on the air at this time might not leave me much time for myself. And you know that some people, including me, quite frankly, have been on a weight loss journey that includes exercise. And that's why I am very pleased to tell you about the folks at Trinity Rehab. These are the folks that are going to restore your freedom to live your life pain-free. So don't be fooled. This is not your father's physical therapy. This is cutting-edge, state-of-the-art stuff. They have something called the EPAT machine. This is FDA-approved, non-surgical, acoustic pressure wave technology, similar to what's used to break up kidney stones. It breaks up scar tissue, enhances healing, and gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for conditions like back or neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, and knee pain. It's just 3 5-minute sessions, and you could be virtually pain-free. There isn't any prescription needed to get started. They're all over New Jersey, now open in Clifton, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, and a brand new location in Short Hills. Call Trinity Rehab today at 800-518-0977. That's Trinity Rehab at 800-518-0977, or go to trinity-rehab.com. We'll continue with Johnny Russo next.
Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Guarantee nights could be long and sweet. The message is clear, like nothing I've ever.
Never Say Never Again from the James Bond film that nobody talks about. Speaking of films, I am very, very pleased to be joined this hour in studio by the great Johnny Russo. He was Carlo in The Godfather. He's written the book, The Hollywood Godfather, and he hosts the Hollywood Godfather podcast, which tackles every subject under the sun. And he has a way of getting people to open up in this podcast that I am just so incredibly envious of. I listened recently, Johnny, to the interview that you did with Pat Cooper.
Oh, my God.
It was the best interview I've ever heard him give, including ones that he's done with me.
92 years old. I've had such a relationship with him for years.
He is as spry as ever.
I know.
And as energetic as ever. You know, one of the things that I heard you talking about in one of the recent podcast episodes that you did, and I don't think you allude to it in the book, but I lose track of what I've heard you tell me, what I've heard you tell on the podcast, and what I've read in your book, is the story of Jimmy Hoffa. There's been a whole lot of renewed interest in case these days.
Well, I think
especially in light of The Irishman.
Oh, my God. Well, that, you know, it's funny. Well, Frank Sheehan had nothing to do with Jimmy Hoffa. He knew him, but I mean, not this guy.
Yeah, that story, people should know, from The Irishman has been totally discredited by both underworld sources and by the FBI.
Well, our earlier conversation was De Niro. De Niro bought that script, you know, in 2004. It took him that many years to get it made. And when I read it, I said, this is all BS. He said, what are you talking about? I said, he said he even supplied the guns for the Kennedy assassination. I mean, any crime,
right.
he made himself involved in.
Yeah, the zealot of organized crime.
I know, he was so crazy.
So what is the real story with respect to what happened with Jimmy Hoffa?
I have my own theory of why the FBI keeps opening these cases up.
Hmm.
I think they send themselves an anonymous letter, and then they get this budget to go dig up somebody else's farmland for 3 months. He's done. He's gone. The guy's gone.
So it's all a budgetary issue in the part of the
family. I think so. I mean, anybody that really knows, I mean, there's not even a DNA available for him. They said he was buried in Giant Stadium. He's buried here. He's buried there. He wasn't buried nowhere.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Jimmy Hoffa Jr. When I met him about 2 years ago. Of the two portrayals of Jimmy Hoffa, Jack Nicholson or Al Pacino, who do you think did a better job?
Oh, my God, Jack Nicholson.
Nicholson.
Oh, my God, yeah. You know, but I tell you, like, the earlier De Niro – oh, no, he did Capone. I'm sorry. You're right. You know, no, I mean, he's brilliant.
Jimmy Hoffa Jr. said the same thing. He was much more partial to the Nicholson version of his father.
I didn't know his father. The kid's around, huh?
Yeah, he's the head of the Teamsters now.
That's amazing.
And it looks just like him from what I could tell.
I don't know if that's a good thing. If there's anybody I can look like, I wouldn't want to be Jimmy Hoffa.
Fair enough. Now, you did allude to spending some time at the Copa Cabana, right?
Hello, all my life.
You were Mr. Copa, right?
Well, I wasn't Mr. Copa. I was a messenger, and, you know, I was 13 years of age the first time I walked in there. And that's why, I mean, I love Avra because that's 60th Street, that's the Copa. Nobody knows that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Avra restaurant?
Yeah.
That's the original building.
Did not know that.
Oh, when I go downstairs to go to the bathroom, that was the Copa room.
Well, so a lot of us who never got to spend time at the Copa, we know the Copa from that famous scene in Goodfellas where there's no cuts, where, you know, Ray Liotta's walking through the kitchen and
they have the special
table set up. What was the kind of treatment that you'd see people like Frank Costello and others getting at the Copa? Is that a
realistic? Well, Costello didn't have to get any treatments. He owned it. Everybody that fronted for him, that's all they were. He owned it from day one.
But would people ever enter in through the kitchen like
constantly?
That
was somebody. They never went through the lounge.
Mm-hmm.
They would call Carmen at the front door, and to let them know he's coming. That's all he wanted to know, because they had more tables lined up in the hallway coming out of the kitchen. Because, you know, people don't realize there's no stage in the Copa. It was on flat floor. So as they needed to head tables, you could be working in a 2-foot square and be Sinatra. But they put people in, man.
Well, no, that's for sure. And one of the part of the legend of the Copa is that you would see entertainers like a Sinatra mingle with a gangster like a Frank Costello.
Of course.
Who were some of the other key entertainment or political figures that would rub elbows with underworld figures at a place like the Copa?
Well, everybody went. First of all, when I went for my gaming license many years ago and got it, fortunately, even my son thought I was a felon. I said no. But every club in America was backed by the mob. If it was Kansas City, it was the Savellas in Chicago. Everyone, because they are the ones that had the money to put up to make these clubs. So as Dean Martin even said, when they were licensed up in Cal Neva, if you don't know the mob, you're not working. Mm. So that's what everybody did. So to answer your question, I don't think there's a performer I know that didn't knob hob with the mob.
When I mentioned that you were going to be on, a lot of I got one email here, and we're having a little bit of a tough time with the phone, so people aren't able to call in. But somebody emailed me to ask you if you had any memories of the Latin Quarter.
Oh my God!
Tell me about the Latin Quarter.
The Latin Quarter. Well, that was his daughter, and the View. That's her father, you know.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why 52nd Street, it's named after him. But the Latin Quarter, I got a gift from Frank Costello when I was 18, and he gave me 4 hat check concessions. I said, what am I going to do with that? And I was sitting with Earl Wilson. So Frank, I was constantly getting up and walking away and getting phone calls. And he said, well, you don't look too pleased. I said, no. He said, you realize what he gave you? I said, yeah, hat check. We're not going to do with these. He said, you make $300 or $400 a night. Even today, people don't realize.
Oh, yeah.
After you checked your hats, then the girls went out and sold cigars and cigarettes because you smoked in all those clubs. So I hired a high of 16 women, which was great, and made a lot of money. But the Latin Quarter was one of the big – Lou Walters –
Barbara Walters Fund.
Barbara Walters Fund, from The View, of course.
Yeah. Interesting. We're going to continue with Johnny Russo in just a minute. I do want to remind people that this morning at 9:40, you could play the Peerless Boilers Beat Bernie contest. You play against the so-called smartest man in New York City, Bernie McGurk, for your chance to win a $100 gift card and an exclusive WABC and Barry House coffee mug. That's all brought to you by Peerless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters. You can go to peerlessboilers.com or paviliontankless.com for a dealer near you, because Peerless Boilers is America's best built boilers.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Don't cry, Joe. Let her go, let her go, let her go. Don't cry, Joe. Let her go, let her go, let her go.
Frank Sinatra singing Don't Cry, Joe. I am joined in studio by a gentleman that not only shares a birthday with Frank Sinatra, but knew Frank Sinatra and has been involved in some of the same professional pursuits that Frank Sinatra has been involved with. You know, I heard an interview that you did recently with Tom Dreesen, the comedian that was Sinatra's opening act. And, of course, we're talking with Johnny Russo, my guest for the hour. What was Tom Dreesen like as a performer? I've had him on the show. He's great to listen to. He's got great stories, too. But what was it like to watch him perform and then be followed by a very different type of act in Frank Sinatra?
Well, I mean, first of all, I never knew Tommy until later on in life when he started opening for Frank. And that was Barbara that got him the job, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Barbara, when Barbara got married to Frank, she got rid of everybody that was prior to her. And Frank let her do it, man.
Was it because she – why did she do that? Just to exercise control?
Yeah, or was she- exactly. And he was losing it and – you know, he unfortunately, most people don't know this, Frank Sinatra, The day he would stop singing, they said that's the day he's going to die. And it wasn't just because of a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mob owned him. He went to too many families. And that's when they all took him. Chicago took him. Everybody took him.
And now, remember, there was this brief retirement that he had in the 1970s
right.
before coming back. And that was due to the influence of organized crime?
Yeah.
I think Bill O'Reilly deals a little bit with that in his book, Killing the Mob, which is out this week. You can hear O'Reilly every night at 9 p.m. I haven't read the book yet, so I can't tell you if it's any good. But O'Reilly's been talking about it a lot. And apparently there are a lot of Sinatra references in that particular book, but it is interesting to note that Barbara had that kind of control over not just his personal life but his professional life.
At the end, yes, she did. But and then she wanted him to keep going also because of the money. But with that said, I felt so sorry for him because what we didn't mention, Frank Sinatra was my only singing teacher.
Mm.
I had my only acting teacher was Marlon Brando. My only singing teacher was Frank Sinatra, and he got me my first professional gig with Don Rickles.
If you're going to learn, why not learn from the best? Brando, Sinatra.
And then he baptized my last son, Luciano.
And you've said that Brando and Sinatra, contrary to what's out there in the myth of Hollywood, they actually were pretty friendly.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, anybody that knows Sinatra close, it's hot and cold with him. He goes through moods. He's bipolar. People figured it out finally.
Mm.
And he's a bad drunk. Anytime after 2 or 3 o'clock, I'd walk away from Sinatra.
Really?
Oh, one day he tried to hit me. I grabbed his hand. I was grabbing like a chicken leg in the arm. It was in the air. I said, what are you doing? You can't talk to me that way. I said, I didn't even say anything to you. I mean, the guy gets crazy.
Talking with Johnny Russo, you should check out his podcast, the Hollywood Godfather podcast. And a lot of people have told me that they've purchased Johnny's book and they've really enjoyed it. But if you haven't purchased the book yet, The Hollywood Godfather, I do recommend it. You can check out Johnny's website, GIANNIRusso.com, and a whole world opens up. You can get the book on there. You can get some of Johnny's music and a lot of other stuff that we're not even scratching the surface of today. We have talked about your abilities as a chef, and you clearly take a lot of pride in cooking and preparing a good meal. And one of my favorite stories in your book is the fettuccine Alfredo contest that led to a food fight with Liza Minnelli. But if you were to give a pro tip to somebody who prepares meals at home, and maybe some people are still a little gun shy about going out to restaurants, what's something that you could tell people would take their home cooking to the next level? Something that's relatively easy to do, but people, if they're casual cooks, just might not think to do.
Well, first of all, you really have to have the passion to cook. People who think they have to cook, they shouldn't cook. Mm. They should order out.
So it's not. It shouldn't be a chore.
It's a passion.
It should be
a love. It's a love. I mean, I'm happy to say I was part of raising $800,000 with Joe Sano over the years.
St. Francis Food Pantry.
Every year I sell dinners at my house. 100% of the money goes.
You do that with Harry Hurley's charity
right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
I've
that's
raised terrific. A lot of money with that. And people come. They pay $1,000 a head sometimes.
Now, as the father of 11, maybe I could get your advice on this one. New York Times just came out with a story today. This is just breaking today. That U.S. births have declined for the sixth straight year. And even with the pandemic, with everybody stuck home and people were predicting another baby boom, the pandemic actually accelerated this trend that's been building for the last decade. Americans are not having kids anymore. The birth rate has declined by 4% again this year. And if we continue, this is going to be a pretty big problem. Any advice that you'd suggest for people in terms of, having more kids?
I don't think it's a passion. I think it's expensive now. To send kids to school today is a lot of money.
Well, that's what I've never understood is you'd hear people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, one of five, one of six, one of seven, one of my wife's one of nine. But that's pretty rare. These days, you never see that. Now, why is it that parents could afford to have five, six, seven, eight kids 40 years ago, but now if you have more than two, forget about it, you're in the poorhouse?
Well, the problem is, years ago, the kids had chores and a job. Mm. They didn't go to private schools. They went to public schools. Now it's like my kid has to go to this school. I have a grandson. He's in preschool. They're paying $14,000 a year.
In Manhattan, I hear about this from so many friends of mine about the expense that they have to pay for kindergarten.
Right.
And I can't understand how parents have put themselves in this kind of a frame of mind.
Well, you know what it is? Society-wise, they're driven to, because if they don't have that pedigree of schools, it's going to determine what college they even go to.
No, it's I think it's nuts.
They've made a business out of everything, unfortunately.
I think it is absolutely crazy, but whatever. That it is what it is. And now you're seeing America pay the price with this 4% decline in birth rate. We did see a week or two ago, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, Bernie Madoff died in prison.
Right.
Came out today or yesterday that the former Speaker of the State Assembly, Sheldon Silver, was released from prison a year and a half into his sentence. You've known a lot of people who have served time in prison. Do you think that prison is a good place for people who are nonviolent, like a Bernie Madoff or Shelley Silver? Is there a better way to punish guys like that who clearly have done wrong, but have a brain and are not going to hurt anyone physically?
Well, see, I always thought white-collar crime, like a Bernie Madoff, why don't he go to Harvard? And he has to go to teach. I mean, he's looked up to people. I mean, you know, people look up to him, rather, and would want to talk to this guy.
Well, that's my thinking. Is a guy like Shelley Silver or Bernie Madoff, is this the best way that society can get them to pay their debt to society?
And it's about $1,500 or $1,500 a month or a week to keep them there. At least let them go earn something. You know, let's create, for those kind of guys, a school that we're just talking about where all these kids can go and nobody's getting paid. We have so many empty buildings. Make a great school for white-collar crime.
It makes sense to me. Now, you also, this may surprise some people, although it may not, you've also built up quite a lucrative career as a motivational speaker, right?
Yeah.
What do you focus on when you do your motivational talks?
Well, you know, what I found out people want to know is how I got started and what is my motivation. Mm. And, you know, and it's the passion, and it's very simple. I've never exceeded in anything that I didn't have a passion for and learned about it before I got into it. I think too many people approach things where they don't do their research. And I never went after something I didn't think I can achieve.
Well, that leads me to my final question, as the hour has just flown by and you got to come back. If we don't do this next week, let's do it again soon. You have done so many different things, and reading about your life and talking to you, whether it's securing distribution rights for The Godfather, whether it's being a courier, whether it's selling pens, it seems like you've always found a way to make money, right? And it
was called survive.
Well,
money came later. How to survive.
Well, so what is the trick to surviving? I mean, you've been able to do it in so many different professions. Is it ingenuity? Is it hard work? Is it out-of-the-box thinking? Let's give folks a pro tip.
No, I don't think it's out of the box because you will stumble. I think it's if somebody offers you a job that you trust, like me, the people offer me, I listen to them because they were so successful and was honest with them and always was loyal. I think loyalty and devotion has a lot to do with achieving anything.
Johnny Russo, it is always a treat to have you in studio. I hope we can do this again soon.
Please, my pleasure, always.
Check out the book, The Hollywood Godfathers. Check out Johnny's website, which is a portal to his podcast and everything else he's up to, johnnyrusso.com. Coming up next hour, we'll explore the exciting world of snow days. Keep asking questions.